Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Dedicated to Henry Farman. In the year of the primal form, the dawn of terrestrial birth, man mastered the mammoth and horse. Man was the lord of the earth. He made him an olive skin from the heart of an olive tree. He compassed the earth therein. Man was the lord of the sea. He controlled the vigorous steam. He harnessed the lightning for hire. He drove the celestial team. And man was the lord.
Well, 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 good afternoon, good evening, good whatever, good whomever, good wherever I may find you. This is Alan Averill, this is Agitators Anonymous, episode 36. This is a really special episode with a very old friend of mine, a very dear friend of mine, and it's a long one, so strap yourself in. It's a spicy meatball, so prepare the gullet. Yes, it's comedian Steve Hughes. One time, member of Slaughter Lord, Mortal Sin, and an international comedian of renown and repute for, well, two decades or so. And this is a really interesting chat with Steve. Everything from lockdown to learning how to let go, spirituality, Buddhism, cancel culture, it's all in there. So hang in there and get to the end of it. The show is sponsored by Hate Couture, Hateful Yet Tasteful, Apparel and Clothing, www.hate.com. Mention the promo code Alan and you will get free shipping. And we have another very special offer for anybody listening in the Americas, and that is 15% off any order at www.metalblade.com. You got to be in the US and A, but mention that, AA podcast, and you will get 15% off your order. So get to it. Right. Instagram is nemthianga_primordial. And if you want to go to Patreon, where I make various other content, there's songs, there's demos, there's bonus podcasts, this, that, the other, go to www.patreon.com/AlanAverill with two A's, AVERILL. All right, without further ado, here is Steve Hughes.
Well, this is Steve Hughes. How are you?
I'm very good, Mr. Alan Averill.
Very good. That's the first time that I've heard somebody say they're very good in this entire year. And,
Do you know what's so funny? I'm having a lot of synchronicities recently. And the other day I was thinking to myself, you know what? The irony being, I've learned a lot this year and unlearned a lot this year, which is the best way to go, really. And I thought to myself, I really should be grateful for this year. I've fucking had a good year, really. And so it's been good. You know, lots of. And then this morning on Facebook, suddenly Rob from Vomitor, who was talking to me yesterday, wrote up and goes, I've had a great 2020. I don't know. And I thought, it's almost like a conditioning that you almost have to get, oh, yeah, it's been horrible, isn't it? Oh, yeah, it's been horrible. You know, oh, yeah, everyone's out there. Oh, it's horrible. Oh, it's so horrible.
Well, you know, our friend Rob is what they call, you know, a luxury hermit, you know. So he's okay with hiding away for you. Have you heard this phrase, luxury hermits?
I have.
The kind of, you know, middle class in new tech people who are like quite happy to pad around or work from home and, you know, walk the dog and smoke a joint and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's okay for you. You don't work with your fucking hands, you know.
I also saw a guy the other day who was interesting, nothing to do with this per se, but in the sense of the way that some people like this. And, you know, Thomas Sheridan, Irish guy, he's a pagan guy.
All right, no.
You'd find him talking at what they would call conspiracy theory conferences. Okay. And,
all right.
Very smart guy, great guy. And he did a great sort of rundown the other day of the archetypical sort of Judeo-Christian, even Islamic monotheistic archetype within the collective cult psyche of why he goes, you think these people don't like the lockdowns? And he did this whole description of using the archetypes of the religious thing to get that. They love it. They love it. Right? And it was brilliantly fucking broken down. You know, it was fantastic. You know?
I mean, I think there's a certain section of society that do like it, that they like the sense of imposed order. And they also like the fact that they don't need to necessarily, they have what they want in life, whether it's their partner, their kids and that and the other. And, you know, they miss maybe the odd one time a year they go to a gig or go to something social, but generally their life isn't that different. But now they have less anxiety about going outside. There's a mixture of different things. But what's been really clear to me in all of this is that my friend said to me, she goes, people don't care about the things you care about. They're not really that interested in freedom of speech and geopolitics. They care about, you know, what the kids are eating for dinner and, you know, all sorts of and very real concerns. But you just said the existential crisis that you have been plunged into is not the same for most people. And most people are concerned with, you know, the day to days of living. So, yeah, it's been you're right. There's a certain section of people who seem to kind of enjoy this hermitage, which I find perplexing to deal with because
especially in the sense of, I mean, it's a very interesting thing to look at. It's something that, you know, I think people who are kind of half, what I really woke up to, especially was how many people are actually so connected to the system, like in ways they don't even know.
Yeah.
And now this situation has really brought that to light. Guys I thought were kind of outlier guys, you know, the kind of people we've hung out with for so long. I know some middle-class English ladies who work at the health shop who are more awake than some metalhead guys I know who are supposed to be kind of out, you know, sort of. Yeah. I'm like, this is very strange, you know. And you suddenly realize that your friends, as much as they've known you for 35 years, I said to one of my friends, do you trust me? He went, yeah, I trust you. I said, well, I've got access to information. You know, I said, I don't say I know the truth about everything, but, you know, do you trust me? And he's like, yeah. But really, at the end of the day, he doesn't. He trusts the TV. He can't really trust. It's just Steve.
Yeah.
You know, so he doesn't because he's conditioned in that way because people – also, this is why I will never watch the TV or watch the news because subconsciously – because it's high-tech mind control, right. So, and it's occultic and it's military grade. So I don't think a lot of people understand that if you grew up with the TV, like we all did, you know, say you lived in a dysfunctional household, it was emotionally unstable or something like that. I used books, right? Someone might use the TV to switch off, right? To escape this circumstance. So that then becomes in the subconscious related with safety.
Yeah.
Like and trance, like and disconnection, and so now you don't even know. Even if you're watching the TV consciously, there can be parts of it that you don't know have gone in a way, and trigger things. And now you suddenly realise that this guy on the TV, I kind of trust him. Why? Because you feel comfort and things. You're getting triggered in ways you don't fucking know. And like,
I think you're exactly right. And it's one of the things that's been very revealing to me this year, is. I listen to people who will say something that I know is the media narrative. And then in the next sentence, they'll go, ah, yeah, but, you know, and I'll say, do you think that, I'll say to them, do you think the Irish media have really, you know, put politicians to the, not the proverbial sword, but at least held them to account, and they'll go, no, no, no. And I'll go, yeah, but you just said the opposite in the previous sentence. Or they'll go like, it's a kind of cognitive dissonance, and it's weird because you're totally right in the sense that we've been programmed by the social media algorithm for the last 10 years. Everything you've bought, everything you've witnessed, everything you've watched, everything you've searched has made, you know, is giving you your version of the news. And that's one of the things that I think is so strange about this moment, is that everyone has a slightly different version, version of reality.
That's a very interesting observation. I never thought about it like that. It's that almost the information flowing into your world space has been alchemized into your...
Exactly. And so everybody is standing a tiny different little bit angle looking at the same thing, but they see completely different things. So whereas I'm concerned about, you know, freedom of speech or existential issues or liberty, other people see something completely different. But yet I was talking to, you know, you talk to, say, what would be my litmus test, the lads I play football with or something like this. And they will say, on the one hand, oh, isn't that a terrible thing about the mother and baby's home, this sort of issue in Ireland where terrible things done to kids in convents were suppressed by the state, as an example. Or there was a kind of cancer screening smear test thing for women a few years ago, and a lot of people died. And I go, yeah, but they're the same people who are now telling you, giving you the information that you're living by in terms of lockdown. And they'd go, oh, well, that was terrible. But I think what it is that the leap to not have blind faith can leave you kind of really unmoored from the shore, which I think we're both quite out at sea for most people. Because it's a dangerous place. The waters are deep and it's a very dangerous place to be, because most people go, like my mate said to me, and he said, this is a perfectly brilliant observation. He goes, mate, I have three kids. If I think like you, I can't be a good dad. And I was like, yeah, you're so fucking right. I can't argue with that. But I said, it would help your kids if for 5% of your rational thinking, you could just open the door a tiny bit to something that's happening. But yeah, it's weird. We're totally played by our algorithm, and it puts us in a slightly different angle, calibrated us, you know. Sorry, I talked over you there.
No, that's very interesting what you said about what your mate said about being a dad, because that's what I find intriguing, what I've watched people I've known for 30, 40 years. Now, I don't claim to know the truth. I mean, what man does, right? And the truth and facts are different fucking world spaces. So, but I know, guys, right? I know what I've done in my life, right? I've read hundreds of books, right? From topics of money, secret societies, occultism, Satanism, religion, metaphysics, psychology, right? I'm not an expert. Right. I didn't, you know, I got this information off people who really are experts, who dedicated their lives to this stuff. And so I know a lot of my people I know, and probably the most, and a lot of people I know who are even kind of awake haven't read this much stuff because they don't find it interesting. Whereas I did. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I know people who have never done it. So they've been going to work, playing sport, ordering pizzas, watching TV, seeing mum every Wednesday, talking about whatever, surely lying on their bed, thinking about their life and their inner world like any other human being, but generally just going to yoga, doing stuff, right? But now they seem to go that everything that I've looked at for 25 years is bullshit.
Yeah, I get the same thing.
Right.
I think what it is because the topics we're being placed within at the moment are so vast. Like, I mean, I would argue with somebody that, you know, the crisis, and I'll put that in parentheses for people who are listening to the podcast but not looking at us, is secondary to issues of liberty. But when you say something like that, people are like, what does that mean? And so you kind of have to go back. I go, well, you know, the birth of every nation, state, citizen, city has been a trial of liberty, without sounding too pretentious. And now I say to people, in the history of all these city states, can you tell me one example of where the citizens of that particular place handed over every freedom and got them back? Because if there is one in thousands of years, I like to know it. And the whole world just handed it over. And my mate is like, I'm telling people there, and I can see their brains are going, yeah, well, look, I just want a good Christmas and we'll get through it. I'm like, I get it. But at the same time,
man, what
can we do?
Do you know what? This year, as I said, I've learned and unlearned a lot this year, and I've become far more humble. But there is a part of me that is almost, I go back to George Carlin, go, you know how you think there's a lot of stupid people out there? Yes, yeah. Well, they're more stupid than them. And you Now, I don't mean to say that they're all dumb people who can't function and they're not wise in other fucking forms of life.
No, definitely not. But
I'm like, this is profoundly weird to me. Yeah. Like, And what's so funny is you said, you know, you're well-versed in history, far more well-versed than me. And so, but when you present something like that, it's almost like, Alan's got a breath. Yeah, this is called knowledge, like information.
I've realized that I can't frame I can't go in too hard with some people. You have to frame the questions differently. So I would say to people, do you think what's happening?
You've learned what I've learned over the years, which is, yes, well, I used to go right in the deep end. And I'm like, what am I doing?
Nobody ever reacts well to that. And the other thing about it is, like, you kind of say, okay, look, do you think this is disproportionate? If yes, no. If yes, then ask yourself, why do you think it is? And does it seem like what it appears? And if the answer is, you know, yes, no, and no, well, now we're standing on the same side of the fence, perhaps. Now, I'm not asking you to stand where I'm standing, but at least to go, I wonder why that's happening. And that just seems to be a very simple thought process that a lot of people don't connect dots that to me were instantly connected. Like when this instantly happened, right? When they went lockdown, I went biometric passports, health passports, infringement of civil liberties. That was my next thought instantly.
And instantly.
I'm still finding it 9 months later saying to people, yeah, hey, you know, a biometric health passport linked to your vaccination that you can take part or not in society is an infringement of your civil liberties. And they go, ugh. Because it's such a huge thing. The caveat for me is I say, but I hope to be wrong. And I don't want to be the I told you so guy, you know?
Here's the fucking thing. Are you under any fucking illusion that we wish to be correct?
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. None at all.
Like, and here's the thing I read a post about it yesterday. Like, don't you understand that if we are not correct and we're all tin foil hat nutters who just take everything to the extreme, right? Then if we're all so insane and nothing's going on, and we're all just idiots, then all we will have to live with is being looked upon as fools.
Yeah.
Right. But if we're not wrong.
Fuck off.
Right.
Sorry. Yeah.
So do you ever think to yourself, to these people, so what if we're not wrong?
Yeah.
Because that is a big concern to you if we're not.
Yeah. I mean, I say to my friends is that if I'm only 10% right, that should still worry you. But if I'm not wrong in the observations that I make about what this perhaps may be, you should be fucking, part of you should be terrified. Now, I know, or at least worried or scared, but it's very hard for people to calibrate that because, I mean, as I have to rationalize it in the sense that Ireland, for example, has never known fascism or communism. But is it one of the oldest democracies, sitting democracies in the world? And the idea that it can't happen here, I understand that. I understand that because, but to try and explain to people, this is perhaps, you're thinking in conventional terms. This is slightly different. This is like a surveillance society, controlled burn, so to speak. And it's very hard to try and get people to recalibrate their understanding of what that means. Sorry.
It's also very hard for them to, because they've done no research. Well, these are my speculations. I think it's also very hard for them sometimes to, because you see people going, but why is this happening? Even some people get a bit sort of, I don't think this is right, but why? Well, see, you don't know. See, I can tell you why.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know the finer details of everything because, you know, this is genius stuff. But if you don't know why it could possibly be happening, then where are you? So you can't grab onto anything. So next minute you're just at the mercy of whatever you fucking hear.
And that's very that's very strange for me, because people need to have a linear narrative where they know, okay, this makes sense because of this and this. But if you say to somebody hey, the nature of power is that it always seeks to gather more power, like control of you is enough for this to be what it is. And they go, what, there has to be some end. And I go, well, you might be dead when we really know the end. It might be 25 or 50 years or 100 years. But again, it's so all encompassing and so existentially huge. I think most people won't really bump up to them until it's like, hey, your kids can't go to school anymore. You've got to homeschool, and the state is going to pay you to homeschool your kids or something like that. Now, that's a very, as I said, I've been saying in the podcast since the start, is that my hypotheticals, I understand, are amplified by my own situation. I'm only a human being in the sense that I've also have my algorithm, which has curated me. There's no escaping that. And so therefore, I could be completely wrong, and it could all be benign and just a money grab. And if that's true, great. And we can go back to normal. But everyone I've asked, and this is the weird thing, right? Even people who will go, Alan, come on. If I say, hey, do you think we're going to go back to zero? Are you ever going to dance with a stranger again? That's my question. George Michael, never going to dance again. And they go, even the most optimistic people go, probably not. And I go, so you're going to accept this anti-human process?
Well, it's so funny you said it. I was about to say, and they can equate the anti-life sort of essence of this, not even essence, it's pure anti-life.
Yeah, it is. It's anti-human.
Yeah, I said, okay, say there's no conspiracy in the world, nothing, we're all insane, nothing. Yeah. Are you still concerned about the way it's been?
Yeah, rolled out. I mean, the previous...
And whenever, ever, have they shut the world?
No, I know. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can be concerned about people's health and safety, and you can also be concerned about that and say the virus is what the virus is. But you can also be concerned at the same time about, as you say, locking down the entire world and civil liberty. They're not mutually exclusive. And that's what I find really disturbing with people, is that they seem to have been, the media has decided that you either have to be one or the other. If you're pro the welfare of, people.
Well, they've already conditioned that with what? Anti-feminist, anti-gay, anti, they did it all to you. You're not sort of, I'm not into feminism. No, you're anti.
Yeah.
You're always the complete antithesis of it. You're the enemy of it.
Well, even if you discuss
the kind of psychological ramifications of perhaps these are strategies that have been implemented into the culture and the narrative as well to bring you to certain points like this, for example, then it's like their mind goes, oh, we can't.
Yeah.
It's too. And it's like when someone in a comment section says to me, okay, Steve, then explain to me all this. And I'm going, in a comment section? Like, it's taken me 25 years of linking and knowing I was lied to. They don't understand. Do you understand that to become a conspiracy theorist? Of course, when you first get into it, because what's driving you to find this? Because you find that this is not right.
Yeah.
Like, there's always been a part of me since I was fucking a kid, right? And of course, when you first get into it, you can become a little radical.
Because
it's like you found, the lost ark.
And you're also young, and that's the nature of being young as well,
Yeah, and also it's just that it is, because suddenly this wealth of information that starts to join things together you could see but couldn't work out. So it's like, and then if you're that kind of person that likes this stuff, it's exciting for me.
Yeah. I mean, right, the thing about it, but if you're young and you read, let's say, when I was young, I read, obviously my father had gone through some of the same moments, and I found Eric von Daniken's books and all this kind of stuff, And so I read them, and it was very interesting, but I was in my own sort of reading space. I wasn't in an echo chamber where in 2 seconds I could find hundreds of other people who believed the same thing, and we all backed each other up and qualified each other's own opinions about things. And that's a huge difference is that you're only a second away from finding the flat earth society, and then apply whatever else, you know, you want to those three words. And then you found your tribe.
Yeah, which, yeah. I mean,
which for us was back in the day was heavy metal, and that was a creative thing. Now it's like...
Mate, me and you are on the same wavelength so much. I was about to say, it's almost like that Sea of Tranquility show I watch YouTube, the music one. Those old guys, they're our age and stuff. So they know that thing. There's a black guy on there, he loves rock, and Thin Lizzy's his favourite band. And he told a story, he goes, the first time I found, what album was it? Tigers of Pantang, Spellbound, right? Because you couldn't get them in the States, right? He goes, we used to go to record stores, and he explained it. He goes, it had a big arrow pointing downstairs. I'm like, fuck, we had one of those, right?
Yeah, right.
He goes, and then I went to the T section. We used to see how cool is this record shop. I wonder if I could find this. And he goes, when I saw that record, he goes, I pulled it out and went, oh my fucking God, right? And listen to these guys talk, and they all go, because remember then, and you just heard it, but no one else had it, and you couldn't find it, and you didn't know where you get it.
Isn't it true that I think one of the things that, you know, just to dovetail on what you're saying there about music, one of the things and one of the problems with many people now is they don't have those. I was being facetious with somebody the other day, and I said, one of the problems is people don't have hobbies anymore. Or, I mean, okay, not in this situation, but for the last couple of years, their hobby is being online, and that's their tribe, their group. And many of the people who are, let's say, confused about the world, maybe in 1987 would have just liked The Cure. Or, you know, or not to be facetious, but we had our little groupings, and you found your people, you know, who understood you, whether it was the freaks and the geeks and whatever, and the hardcore people and the punks and whatever. And so that is now completely missing from...
you can also look at it like this too. If say you're just in some town and you're like heavy metal, and it's only you and your mate or you by yourself, but somehow you meet this guy, right? And so there's a kind of organicness to it, right, whereas now you're just funneled into this algorithm.
It's too fucking close.
And now I can just talk to this guy in Chile. Whereas before I had to wander in the Blue Mountains and meet Mick Burke. And then meet a guy who goes, I know this half Aboriginal guy plays bass. He likes heavy metal and that. Would he be in our band? Yeah, he might be. I don't know.
and then you get one letter with one magazine flyers in it, and it starts something else up. But yeah, it sounds really silly, but just the fact that people just don't have hobbies anymore, so they find themselves occupied within this space online and find the algorithm. Part of the algorithm's job is to curate your outrage, because you spend more time watching what you fucking hate or expressing outrage than you do about anything positive. So is it hardly surprising that we're in a situation after 10 years where, you know, we're talking about microaggressions or something like this?
That's hilarious. Chasing subconscious ghosts. It's hilarious. Yeah. I'll tell you what I've always found about funny people putting negative comments about things or looking for things they don't like. So, of course, you know, you put anything out there, you know, people will not like it. That's okay. But it's like, so you've got a YouTube channel, I have one. Well, to make a comment, you'll have to subscribe. So I think, well, why did you bother subscribing? Just to tell me you think I'm shit?
Yeah. It's just something in human nature. People find you at the bar to go, Alan, you have sayings of third verse of the fourth song tonight wrong. I'm like, yeah, I know. Thanks, man. Thanks for coming to find me to tell me I made a mistake. But I think one of the things about, the things about, for example, the commenting on the internet is like flinging shit into a sewer, you know?
Yeah.
And so...
I'll comment on the internet like, no, I think Number of the Beast is better than Power Slave. Then you won't ruffle any feathers. Like, okay.
Yeah. But the thing about it is what the comment section allowed people to do was to take part in the narrative, even when it had nothing to do with them, or if they never even understood it, or even watched all of it. So your comment is indelibly linked forever in the comment section, unless somebody deletes it. So allowing people to crowd the marketplace of ideas to the point where everyone just suffocates, do you get me? Like, so is part of the problem, because you've just all of a sudden given everyone a voice about everything, even if they've never even read a fucking book. Now, that sounds a bit elite, but, you know...
Well, I mean, you can always make it into funny things. It is. It's almost like if you played your primordial gig and then afterwards the whole band had to stand at a table each while an audience lined up to go, well, I didn't like the way that you went into that bit. Have they?
Then had to go at the sound man and then had to go at the,
I really think you shouldn't have started with that track. I mean, why don't you start with this track? This is my favorite album. And I reckon if you...
Well, but, you know, people do that, but which is fair enough. You know, well, it's... if you paid for your ticket in, okay, but you know, the internet commenting is free, you know.
That's like the that show I watch again, that Sea of Tranquility show, the rock show. The guy who runs it, he's a great guy, cool guy. It's just a, but you always see because he knows how people are, you always see fucking stipulate, you know. So these are my favorite Judas Priest albums. Right? They might not be your favorite Judas Priest albums. But, you know, so, you know, it's just put your ones in.
Yeah.
It's not that I think Stained Glass is the best Judas Priest. It's my favorite Judas Priest. Yeah. It's amazing. You have to stipulate. What do you mean you think Stained Glass is better than that?
It's because, again, let's go back to this. The concept is anti-human because just pitching somebody out on Twitter is, there's no human process to that. And there's also no comeback. There's no, like, you know, you remember in school you talk shit about somebody, they'd come and give you like, oi, you know, and that sort of kept you morally in line to not be such a fucking dickhead all the time, you know. And that, but the fact everything's anonymous and you can just, you know, is that's part of the problem. Like, wait, here we are just giving out about everything, but yeah, it's the anti-human nature of this whole process. It's hardly surprising everybody has gone fucking mad.
Oh yeah, because it is. It's an inorganic, it's a weird situation. It's exactly what you said. You know, I had these dickheads who would just hassle me on the thing. Everything was just like these, and they were just these metal guys from Australia, fucking Greeks or something, like, you know, being that fucking. Well, you hate Greeks, no, but I grew up with Australian fucking Greeks and Italians, and when they want to be smart asses, they're fucking smart asses, right? And I can tell the game they're playing, right? Because I've got status, so they need to bring me down, right? And then one of them comes on one day and just goes, it's not like that, you muppet. Yep. Like that was, because I never answered them. That's when I had to go, excuse me, do I know you?
Because I think the best way to do it is just to not answer anybody.
Oh, no, I never answer. I never answered them for like nearly a year, not once. Right? But this one I finally went, mate, because you young fucking, we learned that you don't walk up to other men in pubs in their conversations and go, yeah, fucking muppet, because we know what happens.
Yeah. And even that process of is being, you know, removed from people as well.
Mate, well, here's the next thing. I'll tell you how they've been programmed and how you come back. So now if you explain something like that to them, they go, oh, so you think violence is the answer? But, oh, my God, because all that PC bullshit comes out of them, right? Now, did I say violence was the answer? I'll tell you this. Violence wasn't the answer. Why? Because we knew if we behaved like that, we would get violence. Yeah. See? So violence wasn't the answer. Like, we just went, it was just a kind of thing that you go, well, you know what happens when you walk up to another fucking person and fuck it.
I mean, and that's the other thing that I think is one of the worst things, is that everybody assumes the complete opposite of it. So if I say to somebody like, hey, I don't support the terms of level 5, the most strict lockdown, I think it's anti-human, I think in the long run it'll cause more harm than good. And the immediate answer is, oh, so you want people to die. It's like, well, no, there is 100 points or 1,000 points between picking the opposite outlying version of every conversation. Like, I think everything resides in the gray area between both points fundamentally, because nothing is generally an absolute truth except for like death and taxes generally. But like, it's, everyone just assumes, oh, well, of course you're this other thing if you're that thing.
We could have
variations of a theme, you know.
If someone responds to me like that, I simply, the good thing about it is I know where I'm standing. I'm now listening to someone who's been given a card by the BBC.
Mm.
This is how it is, simple for me. Because as I said, most people, you can just see most people these days, and you know what argument will come out of it.
Yeah.
Of course you're a vegetarian and you stand for feminism and political correctness and if you don't want to lock down, you must want people to die. I'm like, have you ever thought anything for yourself?
I'll tell you a funny thing, right? I was watching this program with this guy a couple of years ago, and he took a receipt for a coffee, right? And one guy gave it, the other guy, he showed him the receipt and the coffee. And through what was ordered, the, you know, non something or other, I don't know, whatever it was, he narrowed down the price that was paid, the kind of coffee, the obviously soya milk used, the area of New York where the receipt was from, and the coffee shop itself. And he just did all these investigations briefly and just went, right, my guess is this is a 24-year-old woman who is in this, that, and the other, blah, blah, blah. And then they revealed the person with the receipt was like 95% exactly. And so even just a little bit of sleuthing yourself can reveal, just a receipt can reveal almost anything about you, because that's the area you're shopping in, the coffee shop you're shopping in. That's your vegan slam poetry coffee shop or whatever is going on. And you pay an extra buck and you want soya milk and you don't want this, that, and the other. And he just goes, and it's guaranteed she's a Democrat and this, that, and the other. And the whole thing was just nailed by one receipt. And that's fucked, because it more or less tells you, like, I always wonder about nuance in the world and nuance in arguments. I think people are nuanced. And then sometimes every now and again, you get a piece of information and you go, oh, maybe it's not as nuanced as you thought it was. And you can be reduced to a receipt, which is partly what's happening now, you know? Sorry, that was a rather weird segue.
No. I can almost see it simply from one receipt. Some fellow who's probably quite good at this kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But from one receipt, he worked this out. Well, imagine how much information they've got on you now. It's just everywhere, like some big splatter job, right? You know what I mean? So, you know, and I've done it too. You know, I'd love to be off this fucking thing in the fucking woods. But it's. And it must be weird for us to try and comprehend it for, like, kids who are 20 and that, because they've grown up in it.
Yeah, yeah, totally, yeah.
So,
absolutely. I mean, I have cousins who are teens, and trying to understand some of their attitudes about things is difficult. But I do definitely have sympathies with them, even though I complain about, you know, some of the actions of people. But I tell you, I found my old fanzines from when I wrote when I was 16, 17, 18. And I just read some of the things. I was like, my God, look at some of the things I was pumping out with a fanzine. Okay, it's just a fanzine. But if I'd had this, I would have been doing this as well and trying to change and take on the world. Because that's what you do when you're 18. You don't realize what a dickhead you are. And so I have sympathies with other 18-year-old dickheads. It's just the problem is that now they have the ability to get, you know, professors fired and fucking bring down, you know,
and they're all
cancel bands and book. Yeah, yeah. And cancel... You know,
and they're all amped up on stuff that's not true.
Oh, and they're also amped up on the fucking opioid crisis. Adderall up to the fucking nines, and we didn't have that. You know,
that their ADD medication from 5 years old. Who knows?
So
you know, this is a whole. You know, they're having threesomes when they're in fucking primary school. You know,
I'm not so sure of that. I think. Well, okay, I'm not going to get into that. But I think they're less likely to be having sex, actually. But yeah, they're not meeting. You're not. You know, you're just. But no, I do have a lot of sympathy with young people in this respect, especially if they've been placed online since before they were able to agree to it. Like, you know. You have everything from baby pictures all the way up, and now they've never had a moment of privacy.
No, it's very strange. It's very strange. So yeah, I understand that. You know, I don't always like the word sympathy anymore, but I, you know, I don't think I want a bunch of just dickheads if they just came out like this. No,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They've been put through the ringer.
Yeah, like, yeah. I'm trying to explain to somebody who's younger what life was like before the internet is quite insane. You know that.
Do you know what it's? One day I was sitting there, I was lying on my bed, and I thought to myself, that world that I was in the 90s and the 80s is gone.
Yeah.
And I thought, how do I explain that to someone?
Yeah.
Who can't pinpoint it as a reality.
Yeah. Like, it's very strange. And because that's one of the things I was.
I guess country people might still understand it. Rural people, kids who grew up. You know.
Yeah, I guess so. And in certain countries where things have not moved at such a dramatic pace, but for sure, you know, I think it's the falling apart of shared realities that is part of the problem. There once was a time where you watched the news at night and it was relatively non-partisan. and you watched it, you know, I sat with my parents, watched the 9 o'clock news, and you got that, and I read the paper. I read the same paper my dad did from front to cover when I was a teenager, whatever. And because back then you could be a journalist, and you know, your job was to be on the outside of the tent pissing in, not inside the tent pissing out, and you held people to account. You read genuine opinions or genuine facts, and now the fact is that that's completely destroyed. And so we have no shared reality. That 9 o'clock sitting with your parents watching the news, that's gone from society, you know? And how do you explain to people that was something you all talked about the next day in work, school, college, whatever?
And also, that's what amazes me of people our age, my age. It just, even to look at the media, can't you just, where's your instinct for lies gone?
Yeah.
I haven't watched it once. I never watched it anyway. I hadn't since this, especially, right? So I'm like, I just was in the lounge one day, and my mate was having his dinner or something, and it was on, and just the start of the news came out, the intro, right? And I just saw it, and I was like, this is so ridiculous. Like, yeah. It's like, how could you even believe this bit? It's just such dopamine soaked up bullshit. Everything they want you to know. There's a picture of Bill Gates walk across with some Indians. It's just,
yeah.
It's now people are so, I can't believe how they're.
But
it's like they're in this thing. It's just, oh, Bill Gates, why would you hate Bill Gates? He went to India once and it's just, he gave his, I don't see why you'd hate a philanthropist to get his money away. And what do you, I'm sure everybody just, and I'm sort of, it's like I'm outside going, I don't, what's happening? Come back.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, propagandizing is nothing new. It just works on a whole different other level now.
Yeah.
I mean, it is.
I don't think me and you have just ever seen. Well, I haven't personally. Such a drastic situation, which now sort of exposes what was always there.
Yeah, that's true.
The situation has, and now you sort of like, so now you can go, oh my God, all these people who I was chatting to for years and thought were like, well, we're all actually.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that, you know, I do have very clever friends who just say, Alan, this is just a botched response to a system that was broken. And the things you see are, it's not that they're not there, but it's many things are adding to this, you know, like, I don't know, to the sort of the narrative, but that it's not as malign as you think, but because that's what your algorithm has curated for you and that's how you view the world. But there is a happy medium between, happy medium, that's such a fucking ridiculous two words that shouldn't go together. but there is an informed position between those points that, yes, it can be a botched response. It can be political cowardice. It can be people who don't want, I think this is very important. This is politicians and health officials who don't want the risk of personal jeopardy to their careers because of what happens online is so great that they all just kind of are moving in the same direction. It can't turn the caravan around, so to speak, but also elements of this other things that we're talking about and probably agree on happening at the same time. And that's why it's so brain breaking, because it's like taking in 100 different points of view at the same time, and they could all be right.
Well, and here's the thing. I sometimes wonder, you know, of course I don't expect them to know, who can know what any other person's doing, but you know, it's not like I'm running around anymore, just freaking out that new world order is coming. And rah, 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 rah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just like, because I also do sit down and ponder, okay, I now have to analyze the filter I'm looking at the world through.
Yeah, yeah.
From what I've taken in.
That's what I've been trying to do, yeah.
Yeah, right. So to make sure that I'm not, because I don't want my own brainwashing, let's call it that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
To now I have to make sure, I have to process this.
Yeah, yeah.
And look at it without making sure I've got, you know, because which opens my mind up to going, okay, I'll listen to someone else. Right?
It is difficult. It's the most difficult thing that I've been trying to learn this year, is to step back from the ledge and try and not see everything as, you know, malign to benign. I think of this sentence a lot. Never put down to malice what you can to incompetence. And one of the lads I play football with to me, he said a very insightful thing. We're just talking about this, and he just goes, you're giving them too much credit. And I thought, maybe so.
Do you know what? in a psychological world, I mean, a psychological, what's the word I need? Almost assessment of myself. You could look at the words you use. That's why I'll never say, oh, the ruling elite. Well, don't use that word elite. Are they elite? No, they're not. So when you use that, you create a psychological, almost algorithm in your own thought process that may become subconscious, because they're not elite. Fuck them. Don't put them on that pedestal, right?
Yeah.
Pick what your words are, right? See how you talk to yourself, right? Right. Yeah. You know, you have to understand people are subconsciously, so in the matrix, they don't understand that. So some guy in a suit with his legs crossed being very serious at the World Economic Forum is sitting there. Mate, if I walked up and pushed him like that in the back of his head, he'd fall over, I'd pull his trousers down, he might have poo in his underpants. That's all he is. Right, that's all, right, that's it. That's all he is. Right, but there's a part of you psychologically, oh, this man's of status and...
Yeah.
No, he's just a psychopath. Just
yeah, you're right. I'll try and if I can take that sentiment and then turn the volume down to the point whereby I think that the politicians that you are seeing in your own country who are making decisions on the fly, they're also prone to their own algorithm and their own senses of outrage and all the things that they've been fed as well. Like they're not divorced from the same problems or theories that you've been subjected to as well. So you never know what fucking frame of mind they're in. And the fact is, when you really think about it, they're probably on many levels less informed. And so we never voted for these politicians to make these decisions. So I don't have much sympathy for them, but I do understand, I know exactly what you mean in that they're still human flawed monkeys as well, you know?
Well, I think when you just said that we didn't vote for them to make these decisions, which is exactly where I think they've been manipulating the society into this worship of science, which they can then link to the medical establishment. So now that scientists will be able to make decisions which will override politicians.
Yeah.
But you didn't vote for scientists, but scientists and medical professionals will now, but because there's a virus, then that will override.
Yeah.
And now you can make these dictates that come from people you didn't even vote for.
Yeah, right. I think you're right. I was thinking about this in the last few days.
And the people are so conditioned to the worship of science that they'll go along with it. They'll go along with it.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I was thinking about this, in the last few days, and that is that the, how can I put it? We've placed our sort of, democracy had to be placed on pause for these structures to be implemented. And so therefore you can imagine somewhere somebody sitting around going, well, how can we pause democracy? Because the West is fundamentally too democratic to introduce all these things, because nobody would vote for them. Like the working class people are not going to vote for, hey, you all need non-petrol cars now. You all need greater bills for this, that, and the other. So, you can imagine, how the fuck can we pause our democracy? Because we aren't the dictatorships that maybe we would like to be. And this is the perfect, in my opinion, the perfect moment to go.
Of course it is. Because also,
and
it's the perfect thing to do. What? Because you just culturally crossed all boundaries, all borders and boundaries into the human landscape with what? Well, the idea of the loss of your mortality. Right. So
what do you mean by that?
Well, like in the sense of, there is a virus. Now, they could just tell you there was a virus.
Okay, right.
I'm saying that if you want to get the whole world as an excuse to stop, well, what's the oldest primal button that you can press on every culture, person, living thing, right? The fear of death.
Yeah.
Right. So bang, virus, bang, the whole world. And even subconsciously, they're pushing that button.
Yeah.
Right. So what they know what's going to come out of that. Fear.
Yeah.
Utter fear. What kind of fear? The most existential fear of your own non-existence.
Yeah.
So if people could understand that, now we get into mysticism, just that they're not existing anyway.
Yeah. I thought when you got into that stuff on, we're talking about this, on the trigonometry, you got into that, the spirituality stuff on the second half of it. It came across really, really well, actually. Because me and you used to always argue about that to the nth degree. And then I was listening and I was going, yeah, okay, duality, fair enough. You know, maybe it's just a sign of my age, you know?
Well, see, these words have just been triggered like everything else, like spiritual, God. They cause people to think things now that aren't, yeah. And all they are is words to describe the undescribable. You know, that's what God is, a word to describe. It's what an angel is. You know, I heard a great description of an angel the other day. I was listening to this mystic. He goes, an angel's not real. The angel is an idea of God. Mm. Right? And here's the part. You're manifesting. Why? Because it's an idea of what the mind cannot grasp.
Well, yeah, I mean, the idea that we're just on a rock hurtling through space with no purpose is a bit too dark for most people. So we had to give things names, you know.
Well, I don't think we are. I think, you know,
I'm saying that idea is a very kind of dark existential thought for people, and so therefore, you know, if you think about it, you go back to our hunter-gatherer past and how we, you know, feared lightning and gave it a name, or they had to call the god of the forest to keep people from going into the forest, and you know, our sort of, what do you call it, zoomorphic ideas of giving nature godhood is where I think it all came from, and we just sort of inherited that process. And like I believe that the journey is very important. I'm just not sure about the destination. You know what I mean?
Well,
was that the most pretentious thing I ever said?
No.
I can think of worse things at 4 a.m. peeled off my head in a tour bus.
Sticking a stick at the cassette deck.
I hate this band.
That was very funny. What if you got to be rock and roll? You got to be rock and roll.
Yeah, break a huge branch off a tree outside and come in and smash the stereo.
Oh, yeah, that's why I could never make bands when I was young with people who were willing to. Well, I should perhaps make sure I've got my job and all that. No. Join. You have to join.
Like, yeah.
Fucking.
You have to join the cult. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you have to join the fucking cult. Otherwise, it's not real.
You know, so. No. Tell me this, though. Have you been playing? You said you played the odd gig lately. What was that like?
Well,
what have you been doing? Like, you have played the odd gig, haven't you?
Well, I played a few when I got here before this bullshit, and I've done one or two since this thing. But it's just... One, you're not prepared.
Mm.
You know what? You don't want to do this gig? I haven't done gig for 7 months.
Yeah.
Oh, I need 20 minutes. Yeah, okay, I could wing it. Just go out there and tell some old jokes about fucking Amsterdam and rah, rah, rah. Rah, yeah. Rah, rah, rah.
Play the hit.
So what's that? Yeah. So what's that? But even then, you got to remember them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, they're not all sitting here ready to fucking come out.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I found the most sort of disappointing, but I should have known it about this situation, is how little people give a shit about art. In that our state and our government, not a single person has stood on a stage for 9 months. The state gave people nothing. They didn't try and give them an open air show, maybe for free, a few in the summer to give people some humanity, no comedy, no theater. There's not even been a conversation about it. They placed some stuff in the budget and went, shut up, here's some money if we reopen. But, you know, the idea that art means absolutely nothing in this context was really, I knew it, but really quite revealing. Like, wow, no one gives a shit about the cultural things that have defined us as people. You know, like, one person said to me, why do you give a fuck about the theater? You never went to the theater. I was like, everything that's wrong about this is in that sentence, you fucking dickhead. It's like, yeah, the oldest expression known to man, get in the, gather in a square and tell a story or whatever, you know, in a circle. And you're like, you never went to the theater. It fascinates me and also depressed me.
Well,
this means nothing at all.
It shows a very, it's just so, I mean, yeah, I didn't get into theatre. Well, one, I'm in a band. So secondly, I'm doing fucking theatre. Secondly, just because I didn't go to the theatre doesn't mean lots of other people didn't go to the theatre and that the theatre wasn't important. What about this? Don't you get?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. how's this? How come I understood that theatre was important, but I didn't even go?
Yeah. It's because it's totally true.
And here's the other thing. I grew up in Australia, so I already understand what it's like to live in that kind of fucking culture.
Yeah.
Do you know what there's a famous football player, so I'd have to, Australians will get this joke immediately, but I'll tell you who it is. It's the end joke. But the famous football, because the name is perfect for a punchline, a famous football player called Fatty Vaught. So he was a short little stocky guy, you know, hardcore, smash big guys, and he eventually was on the footy show and was the host and all this. So he's a famous sporting celebrity TV character in Australia. As I said to them one night on stage, I said, so here's what I want to tell you. I might stand up here and go, you've got no culture in this country. Now, some of you might get offended. Some of you might not give a fuck. Some of you might feel, what do you mean? I said, well, okay, this is an Australian sort of culture. I said, let's look at it like this in the sense of our European roots. I said, could you tell me one composer, poet, ballet dancer, architect, playwright, you know, musician, so forth, you know, painter, that has higher status in this country than Fatty Vaught? And of course, that's when they all go, actually, no. there's not a, you know, that's why I've always like preferred Europe, even if it's got, because I know that I've got that environment around me, you know, like there's a, whereas Australia, mate, you know.
Yeah. Well, but this whole situation, yeah, I mean, we saw different countries try and do distant shows and, you know, areas of Germany, I watched things like, you know, those outdoor opera and they were trying to at least give people, again, comes back to the word, some humanity with some form of expression. But here, nothing, because art is only linked to tourism. And so therefore, who gives a fuck about it?
Yeah.
You know?
Australia's the same.
And which is bizarre for me because Irish people like to lean into our creativity when it suits them, you know? You know, oh, a few points. Ah, we're the nation of scholars and saints.
I was going to say,
fuck off.
When I say I know, I don't know as an Irishman, but I know by living in Ireland and knowing Irishmen that I know that. Yeah, yeah. That poetic, where the fuck am I? You know, like,
yeah, well, we certainly saw what it was worth to society during this, you know? I mean,
they want to be that on the weekend after a few pints, but during the week they're celebrity Love Island.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and what was also astounding to me was the silence from all the big artists in Ireland, all the big people who should have been like, the terms of this are, you know, artists should be allowed to do this, that, and the other. No, didn't hear anything about the Bonos and the Sinead O'Connors and the.
Is it? Well, Sinead's a bit fucking ill.
Yeah, but, okay.
But no, I thought about you two, who are a band I do love, as you know. And like, but I did think about them and other bands that have big sayings. And I thought, well, where are they? Where are they?
Yeah, nowhere. And
nowhere.
You know, even small movements about crew and people in theatres and, you know, because it employs so many people. People forget that artists employ all of the, you know, obviously the lighting engineers, the sound engineers, everybody who, even the people in the catering, the guy who comes in the van to collect you in the morning, the stone that drops in the like the pond or whatever you want to call it of being creative that ripples out affects so many different people, and that it could never even get any traction in this argument.
These are the things where you don't even have to be conspiracy theorists, but you still can't get through to people. Don't you see anything in that?
Yeah, because
just shutting it down like it's of no importance whatsoever in the sense. What? Yet yet before this, you were watching TV shows in the morning, or morning island or something, with a naturopath psychologist on there who was telling you, well, it's best to be out in the sun and to be eating this and to be getting together with your family and that. And you were listening to all of this stuff and you're all going, yeah, that's great advice, wasn't it? But now all of a sudden, in all countries, they were saying that, well, oh, it's lovely, Australia, make sure you do that, see your mates, rah, rah, rah. But as soon as this happens, no, you don't want it. But weren't you just saying it was so important?
Yeah. And so, I mean, and the arguments I have with people, I said it to my friend. I said, what was the first piece of music you played this morning? And she said it, and I said, well, you do realize that band would never exist in terms of lockdown. And as this rolls on, if this rolls on, no bands will exist. That band, or that night you had where you met your spouse in a nightclub, and that doesn't happen. And you try and make it human to people, and they go, all of these things don't happen. You don't laugh at a comedian anymore. You don't go to the footy with your dad. You don't. These things don't happen in this. You know, it's gone.
They can't fathom that it would stay like this.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't fathom that as it stays longer, but you're offering the carrot of it not. They are acclimatizing you, right? So that you won't. You'll suddenly be in it, feeling not that fucking bad. Like maybe it's just. My mate in Melbourne, he said he went to a thrash gig the other night. They opened it up. 40 people allowed in, sitting at tables, watching a thrash. I would have walked out immediately. Right? Yeah. He was just going, this is fucking retarded. I've got to fucking leave. And there was a bloke, and I knew this would happen straight away. Just goes to him, better than nothing. Yeah. Here's the next one coming.
Yeah.
Better than nothing? What do you mean? Who are you? You're such a beggar. Like.
True. I'm not sure what the alternative is, but you're right. It feels like just taking the crumbs from the table, the small, you know, a few little bits for you, you know.
And somehow you sit there grateful to psychopaths who will gladly drop depleted uranium all over. I mean, don't you understand? These are the same institutions. Don't you understand that? Like, why would you let the same institutions who told you there was too many people on the planet stick something in you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and also this push to just move everybody into being content creators, which, I mean, I've been saying this during the last few months, is like, if this is how it is for rock or metal or playing in a band, then I just won't do it anymore. Because this, just playing an acoustic guitar in the room, I'll quit. You know, I'll bow out and become a serial killer or a politician or, you know, what. But
I've already, if someone said to me, see, here's what the thing that I saw, I can piece it together by just having a drop of information come into my head now. I walked past the lounge, I saw an ad. I think we're coming across, we'll start to be more innovative. And that's when I don't know why I said Irish then, I'm getting into it. And then, as soon as I heard that word innovative, I thought, no, you're not innovative. What you're going to do is you're going to transfer everything into this realm and you're going to promote it as innovation. So now when you go, oh, aren't we innovative in a time of crisis? We'll just get on and do comedy on the internet. I'm like, no, yeah. I'm not doing it. Why? Because you're manifesting the reality.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it's submitting to this level of anti-humanism.
Which I won't do. I won't fucking do.
No, I agree with you. I won't do it either. I'm not playing gigs in empty rooms to nobody and asking to be paid on Vimeo. It's not happening.
If someone said to me, would you like to do comedy in front of a bunch of people sitting in their cars?
Yeah, no.
I don't know how you can ask me that and not feel that I wouldn't be offended. What are you talking about? Like, and I'm the anti-offended comedian, remember? But I'm like,
yes,
but I'm like, well, I probably wouldn't be offended. I'd just get no and go home.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been floated to me like, hey, maybe you should get on Twitch and play computer games against 20-year-olds from, you know, I don't know, this Pacific Northwest for money. And I'm just like, I can't, I'm a middle-aged man. I can't do that, you know? And also if everything is just removed or reduced to just being either a content creator with little purpose, I keep using the word agency. Do you know what I mean? And you're talking about human processes should have human agency, but when it has no humanity and no agency, then it's just this, you know, and I can't live like that.
It is. It's just that.
Yeah.
Or as Ken Wilber, a guy I used to read years ago, as he described, Ken Wilber, he's often described as the most intelligent man the United States you've never heard of.
Right.
So he wrote books that were kind of based in, he understood science a lot, but he also understood mysticism and Buddhism and non-duality. So he used to do these kind of understanding of Western culture with its kind of lack of depth in the way that Newtonian science had come in as a simple version of what he was talking about, right? Compared to Eastern mysticism, where the whole sort of cultures are based in this kind of depth psyche. So he used to call the Western look of, you know, the view of objects and that just as flatland, right? Like you live in flatland, like a world of surfaces, all span, no depth, which is exactly this world. You know, it's just all, there's no you there. There's no, I mean, you saw it when people used to go to gigs and now they're filming the band on their phone, but I used to think, but the band is here.
Yeah.
Like, so are you going to film this so you can go home and watch what you didn't see?
it's interesting you make that point about the West. I mean, I'd say that one of the big differences, of course, is that maybe the West was like that once upon a time, but it went through the Industrial Revolution, which
oh, of course it was, because, you know, if you're listening to, I listen to Western mystics, they're all saying the same thing as Eastern mystics.
But now they call it the Fourth Industrial Revolution, which is kind of, you know, it adds another level of onto what you just said. But yeah, you're right.
Well, it sits well with the Fourth Reich, you know.
well, that's this podcast demonetized then.
Oh, wow.
Well, you don't get enough clicks for that. But it's the idea that
that was only based on a book I read years ago, The Rise of the Fourth Reich. So, you know.
All right. Yeah, it's a history in it. Yeah, I mean, it's all this idea of corralling everything into just being content creating. Is the kind of most depressing sort of reality of it. And I saw musicians at the start of this doing like cooking programs, or the idea that you hear about musicians and they bring them onto TV and they go, oh, so you've done a tour on Zoom of different places and how's that going for you? And it's all about, all I hear about is like, oh, well, there is another economy out there. And you want to say to people, well, it's not about the economy only. There's other things as well. It's not just about shuffling papers in the budget.
You can see.
It's like, hey, we'll give you universal basic income, but just stay inside. It's like, well.
Mate, it's, if someone says, you know, as you say, it's more about the economy, but people go to the economy. If someone says that to me, all they're doing is displaying their conditioning. I mean, that's been conditioning forever, isn't it? Money's the thing. Who sold the most records, right? And now it's got you. Yeah, here we go. Well, it's like this. I'm like.
Yeah, I mean, of course, people still have to have methods of feeding themselves and feeding the kids and all that kind of thing, no problem. But at the same time, to reduce art or creativity to its only worth being either that there's potentially a new economy to it. I mean, we released a Dread Sovereign single last week, and I was saying to people in interviews, well, so releasing music now is just like, it just makes you a statistician. Oh. All you do is watch numbers go up and down and talk to people on a screen, you know? That's not why you started a band.
No. That's not why I started. Yeah. How can I do comedy on the fucking internet? What are you talking about?
Yeah, I know. It's fucked.
But what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Hi, everyone. I'm here in my room. So what's going on? What have you been up to?
Crowd work is going to be difficult.
I mean, do you see them on the screen? Like, how many? I don't know.
I have no idea. I presume you see lots of little faces along the butt, but maybe you don't. Maybe you
don't. I can't comprehend how any of... Well, I worked out this years ago, and is this arrogant or elitist? I don't know. But I worked out this years ago what the amount of artists I knew who wouldn't sell out... Well, now I know two. You and me. I worked out, and I'm sure there's many others in the metal world out there, but I worked out years ago. I used to think all these guys I knew, and I realized that one fucking ad.
Yeah.
Right, like just.
Actually,
my friend in London, Anil, you know, the Indian guy, he did. They offered him 10,000 quid for an ad to advertise gambling. He went, no, that's it.
No.
Yeah.
No, we got offered ads to do things for telephone companies and things like this. And I didn't even have to ask the rest. I'm just like, no, that's not what we're, you know, not what we're about. I mean, I think and this is one thing I did write this down to ask you. A friend of mine from South America said to me, she sent me a picture of like, hey, we're at a football match, you know, kind of like mocking me a little bit. And then she just said, you know, she had this thought, and we kind of simultaneously had this thought. And she says, you know, it's possible that poor people in the developing world are going to be freer than rich people in the first world.
Mate, I knew that fucking 20 years ago. Mm. I used to say to my, because especially probably 15 years ago when I started to go to some of these places, I already knew. And as much as, you know, I don't sit there and romanticize poverty if you haven't got a toilet, I've been to some fucking serious shitholes in my fucking life. And these people were not miserable.
Yeah. I mean,
and I'm not going to romanticize it. I'm not saying there's not misery and tragedy in there. I'm saying that. And they know how to live.
Yeah. I mean, I will say this. Right. I don't think, I have had people say to me, like, oh, were we ever free? And I go, yeah, but look, right? A year ago, we were able to pursue our dreams, goals, and aspirations. And now we're not. So, yes, I get your flippant argument, were we ever free? We were, fundamentally, to a degree. We had our own personal autonomy. Of course, there were checks and balances. There always is. But projecting forwards, it could very well be that living here is far less free than living in fucking Costa Rica or Fiji Senegal or whatever, you know?
Mate, those places are already free, I reckon. They've been free for ages. You live on the beach somewhere in a hut. I can walk around with no shoes on. I'm like, you know, I sort of know, growing up in Australia, I haven't been into rural places and hanging out there in festivals in the 90s for 2-3 weeks at a time. I know what happens to you when you wander around with no shoes on for 3 weeks in the fucking woods, right? you kind of lose sense of things and time. Just kind of, and it's good.
I mean, it is just a strange thought that, I mean, again, like I said, I caveat all these things with people listening to us going, oh, look at these two paranoid old white dudes complaining about stuff. I go, I keep caveating my opinions about things with people going, this is the kind of thing that interests me to talk about. And talking about the more benign possibilities isn't very interesting, but I'm perfectly willing to admit and want to be wrong about a lot of these things. Like when you go, people say to me, oh, you just want to be doing I told you so. And I go, no, I don't, because it's not about me. This is fucking huge, what's happening. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
It's not about me.
I want you to come up to me in 9 months at a festival and poke me in the fucking side and hand me a beer and go, see, you were fucking, you know, you were too far gone. And I will go, yep, and great, that's brilliant.
Do you know what? I used to say for all the people in the world to be free, I will be that guy in the caravan with the purple cats. Right. That's that bloke who used to fucking say these things.
Yeah, but again, the idea that that thinking about these things, people assume only narcissism and selfishness within the arguments, and what you're trying to talk about is again freedom, liberty, you know, individual sovereignty, all these kind of things. And people will say, well, you just want to say I told you so in a year. It's like, well, no, not at all.
I find it strange that they are, not strange, but these kind of cliched reactions. Well, were we ever really free? Which is kind of like saying, hey, I'm deep.
Yeah. What does it mean? It's like, look, you know, you were able to, you know, play music, do this, the other, go on tour, go to this, go to that, you know, get on a plane and go to Japan and wherever you were. You know what? Yeah, there were checks and balances, but you were fundamentally free. Were we ever free? Were we always controlled? And it's like, you're not a fucking serf living in the 15th century. I get, you know what I mean? Even though that's kind of what this may be.
But also, when he goes, oh, were we ever free? I'd like to ask these people, but what if I came up to you 10 years ago? Because in my world of understanding what conspiracies, I would equate with, no, you're not free. Right? Mm. No, you're not. Right? But if I told you that 10 years ago, you probably would have called me a conspiracy theorist. What are you fucking talking about, man? I can fucking do what I want and fucking go to the pub and all that, right? Yeah. But now you're acting as though you're kind of a bit existential and going, oh, well, were we really free? Is it? which to me looks like just an excuse because you don't want to confront the reality that's sitting on your doorstep, which may fall into your lap at the drop of a fucking hat, because fear has been triggered in them. Yeah. And I can see the denial in them. It's almost a psychological reversion to the womb.
Yeah, I mean, I do have sympathies with things like that, because I do understand that to be, as I said, completely unmoored from the shore and out at sea in deep waters can be, you know, a difficult place for people to be intellectually or emotionally. They can't function the same way. So to all of a sudden to turn around and go, I don't have, like, for me, I never had any faith in these institutions anyway. And so I had none to lose. And so for people who have faith that there's somebody out there with their best interests at heart, and there are some people, sure, but to lose that faith in the middle of this for some people would just be so...
That's what I was saying before. They're so... They don't know how much it's got them. Right? Mm-hmm. I used to say years ago, if you got a lot of people in the busy Western... And for a month, instead of going home and after their dinner, they had watched TV, they sat around a fire with their family, just sat there around the fire. I reckon after a month, some of them would probably go mental and couldn't hack it. But after a month, I reckon half of them would probably go, oh,
yeah.
Like, I didn't know it was in me. Like, yeah. Like all that fucking shit.
Well, it's entirely addict forming. I mean, you know, your average person pulls out their phone to check in with it. I mean, every 6-7 minutes, you know, just every moment in the world where you could, where you just have a pause is punctuated with, and that's addiction. That's the same as, you know, on a night out, you need to do another fucking line. You need to fucking keep chasing it, or, you know, you need to have a smoke every time to punctuate the moment. And so you are, it's completely.
Oh, well, it's an addicted society.
Mm.
Sex, shopping, gyms, television, work, drugs.
Mm.
It's just an addicted society. If people could understand that, it's all just you're in this fucking matrix. It's not a fucking joke, people. Like. Even psychologically, you're in a fucking, mate, you just trust doctors without thinking. You just trust teachers. You just trust people. You just, the experts, the scientists, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Heaps of people are almost like that. They're almost fucking like that. I can tell by the way it comes out. They may as well just have a card from the, when I go, what do you think? They should just present me with a card that the BBC gave. I think this. Okay. Which ironically is where they're going to take this thing.
It's even the thing about, for example, the, as we said at the beginning, or I think was that the concept of trusting your freedom to big pharma when 2 years ago people were, you know, were look, they caused the opioid crisis, etc. And you're like, okay.
Well, you know what you're saying, is that what cognitive dissonance is? This kind of weird thing where, because sometimes I see people put posts on and I go, Jesus Christ. Right. And then I put something up, and they like it. But I go, how did you like that? Because what you put up yesterday is the complete opposite of this.
Yeah. I think there's like 20 phrases that sum up the last couple of years, and cognitive dissonance is definitely one of them, along with, you know, loads of intersectionality and all these new words we know. But cognitive dissonance, it's so profound. But I think what's maybe if you dig down even further into it is the idea that, for example, say in communist Russia, right, in the 1980s, you would pick up Pravda and you'd be told how well the economy is doing and all of the lies you had to row in behind as a person in that society to function. But then you queued for 4 hours to get in for no bread. The cognitive dissonance of those two things is almost Stalinist demoralization in its ideal, which is what I think is happening now. And so therefore the idea that you have to be a good citizen, you have to subscribe to the lie, even when you know, you can see that that's not what's happening.
That's
Orwellian.
It's a perfect description of it. You know, you're more well-versed in all these things that went on in these countries, but you know, I knew something like that, but that's a great description of it. Exactly. That psychological schism that would be created in this kind of, you know, it could drive a person insane.
I think it is.
Because it's an unreality. Like it's a.
Yeah. I mean, like you know, you get somebody who has a small business.
And especially in the sense of, say, Stalinist Russia, you know that above it is this tyrannous.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That will.
That can disappear
you in a second. Yeah.
So you're in this psychological schism.
Yeah. Yeah. And that surveillance, that level of Orwellian surveillance or whatever. Yeah. Or the disappearing society. I mean, it's exemplified in so many things that are happening now, whereby we can see that, you know, it's okay to go shopping in this huge major shop, but your small business has to say shut.
Here's the parts where I laugh.
There's no science to that, you know. So
here's the parts where I laugh. The parts where, okay, so there's no conspiracy theory. Okay, so there's none. But what's that?
Yeah. Is that the retaking of property? Is that the you know the
what is this? But then they just go, blah, blah, you know, blah, blah, blah. They just go, I'm not there anymore. I left that speed. I got over the anger speed hump.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Because also I look at them like a blessing, like thanks, you know. I had to face the part of myself that fucking, because where's that going to get me?
But you said a very interesting thing in the trigonometry thing, I thought, which was about sort of letting go a bit, you know.
Well,
and that's something that you learned to do this year, you think, or what? Because we know each other for a long time, and you know that's a new thing to learn. It's pretty interesting.
If now, because me and you have been discussing, and people listening, are these two old bastards just get red, right? And they go, because you always get the people that go, okay, so where's the solution? Well, there is no. So, okay, do we have a solution that my mind would offer me that I could form a structural thing that we could all get together? Of course not. What are you talking about? This is a global fucking thing. So, me and you wish to see, you know, I was a bit lefty and fanatical when we used to butt heads about these things, you know, more lefty than I knew. Here's my total misunderstanding. I didn't even know what lefties and righties were. I didn't know that certain papers were that side. I just bought them and read them. right. So, because I've always been more informed by alternative stuff and spirituality and all that kind of stuff. So, but when I have a, you know, you have a depression for 5 years and a breakdown, well, that helps your face.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you suddenly realize all the shit parts of you, and you realize the parts of you where I was a robot.
Yeah.
I was a fucking robot. As much as I thought I was sort of outside the fucking thing, and I, like, you know, I had more of an outsider thing like you, because it's kind of natural to me since I was a kid, you know, like, this is all a bit weird, isn't it? Right. So, but that breakdown really, you know, shattered that into a thousand fucking pieces. You know, there's no one to blame for this but you, and there's no, and that's not even a point. I mean, I'll tell you, it's hard to explain this really. I remember standing outside the doctor's office when I was first beginning my 5 years into fucking the shadow of death. I remember standing at the front of this doctor's office in this darkest depression and this thing, and it was almost like in front of me, like there was almost, I couldn't see it like a vision, but it was like there was a void, right? I realized I'd fallen into a void, and for the first time in my life, I realized I can't get out of here. Right? Like there's nothing I can do. Like before, I couldn't be in a band in Australia, so I'll become a comedian. I'll try that. Well, I can't. So I'll go to Ireland. I can do something. I want to make another. I could crawl out. I could create things. I'm in Australia. I'm not going to be successful in a band here, but I'll do it anyway. How can I do it? I'll make a plan, and I'll fucking do it. That's what I realized. I can't get out of here.
You mean like a coping mechanism? Yeah, you didn't have any,
not even like a coping, like. I was in the deepest depression, not sadness, depression. Yeah. I realized that my body was ill somehow. I didn't know what yet. Adrenals burned out, gut issues, the neurotransmitters have blown out. Yeah. I can't function. I've lost my girlfriend. I'm in Australia. Where do I live? I'm in a house. But it was almost not just circumstance. It was within me. Like I can't, I'm in a place I've never been.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, right. This is a place I've never been. This is fucking intense, right?
And so, yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. Well, it was fascinating for me to hear you say that you've developed the ability of letting it go in this situation, because it's a very difficult thing to learn. So just trying to, I was thinking, how has Husey figured out that?
I listen to things. Well, I listen to fucking. So this is, if we got time to talk, and we'll try and put a synopsis on something which is a kind of deep subject and a mind fuck. So I was reading those books years ago, Non-Duality, when I got into Buddhism, everything. For a quick synopsis of Buddhism in the sense of enlightenment.
Okay.
Let's do a quick synopsis of Buddhism, right? So they'll view the world as, call it samsara, right?
Okay,
so
yeah.
So this is the world of duality, subjective, objective, right? This is samsara. They then say we want to become enlightened, which burns off karma, which then reunites them with groundless being, what you might call God, where they say you truly come from. You're not the yin and the yang. You're not the subjective object. You're not this world. There's a groundless being that manifests this world, which through mysticism they call God or source or energy. These are just words for this thing, right? Their thing is, if you then become enlightened in this realm, you then break the wheel of karma where you don't get reborn back into samsara, because you've reunited what you really are.
Okay.
Right? So, yeah. Now here's the mind fuck. You can't reunite with it, and you can't do anything to get there because you already are it.
Okay.
In the sense of groundless being, that your real nature of what you really are is the source that births who you think you are.
Okay.
Right.
I've been to Buddhist countries, and I've if there's any one religion that sort of would resonate more with, I think, what human beings are naturally, it would probably be Buddhism. But it's religion isn't something that ever really called to me too much since I was
because all that side of religion is fucking either me, no way, no fucking way. But when you get to Christian mystics, when you get to Sufi mystics, when you get to Hindu mystics, they're another fucking set of things. But that's not in the realm of fundamentalism or churches or fucking, they're like, it's all non-dual. All of it, doesn't matter what denomination, it's all non-dual.
So, so do you think that, okay.
So let's talk about letting go control, right? What they're saying ostensibly is, one, you think you're the body. It's the anchor of your reality. Right? Like if you think about yourself, you'll probably see yourself as a body. If you think about other people, you'll see them as a body. Right?
Okay.
If you think about Dara, you think about dressed, of course. But you know what I'm saying.
Yes, thank you for that image, yes.
So what they're saying is, okay, so now you're in this, you have a subjective world. You're now seeing things as objects, right? You see yourself as an object, and you see yourself in a world of other objects, right? Which you bash up against, right? This is a simplified version of this, right? But you also have a subjective world. There's a subjective world going on, a psychological world, a subjective realm of the mind, right? So we all go, so they ask, well, what does the mind really do? And what does it get up to if you don't know what it's really up to, right? in a sense, right? Because it gets conditioned, right? And so they go, it's not that the mind is bad, it's just that most of you, it's dragging you around like a fucking dog, right? Because it's there for practical things, right? It's not like you become a robot and you just, not that you don't think, but it's just that if you're just letting it, because here's where it gets mind fucking, right? So you've got the body, the nervous system, the brain, you've got the psychological realm, the new sphere, the psychological realms. They go, they're so entwined, right? So a thought comes up. The mind grabs the thought. This is all happening like this, right? This is a description of something that's putting into a literal description of something that's not probably what it is, but it's a way to describe it, right? So you have a thought. The mind grabs it, right? The mind takes ownership of the thought. The nervous system is in like this. All the conditioning that you think you know about reality comes into play through the emotions, the nervous system, all this. This now creates the image you have of yourself. Right? They're telling you, now you think that's you. From your natural, organic, primordial state. And they're telling you, no, it's not. There's a primordial state that's manifesting all this, and you're of that. This is the illusion in duality, and you follow the mind and look at the state of the world. Well, here's what the mind is giving you. Because that's the ego, the mind, the don't tell me what to do, the fucking I know what's right, I know what's fucking right. But where is the mind going to take you? It'll just take you on a million journeys. Mm. Where's it going to get to? Peace? Never. Because once it got to peace, it'd go, but what about that? Right. It's never satisfied. I listened to this guy. He said a great thing right now. He goes, here's the problem most people don't understand. He goes, the mind has an agenda and you're not in it. And he goes, and it will take you wherever you think. He goes, it's almost like a fisherman that throws things out like anything, like real quick, like, I'm a loser. I'm a fuckwit. He goes, and it just waits you to grab on. I'm a loser. That'll do. Let's go with that.
Mind is an agenda and you're not in it. Hang on. That's a perfect moment to end this, I think. The mind is in it. Ugh, I'm good. That's too much to fucking... you broke my brain there. And they do.
Okay.
Here's the addendum. Here's the...
So we'll just wrap it up quickly. So here's what you're about letting go control. So your groundless being, this is manifesting. Therefore, once you live in this, they say you live in duality. Therefore, use the mind to try and create what you want in this duality. But you also, now you're in the realm of duality, which has laws, right? So then you go for happiness. But as soon as you seek happiness, you've instigated sadness. Because it's the opposite.
Right, okay.
Right, and most seeking of happiness is born out of the seed of sadness. Right. And because this is a law, the energy has to return to sadness. So this is why you keep going up like this.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's not that, and then you blame circumstances.
Yeah.
Right? But they're trying to tell you, there's a great Zen saying where the Zen master's there and the student walks in and he goes, how have you been? The master goes, how have you been? He goes, I've had a really rough 2 weeks. He goes, that's fantastic. He goes, why would you say that? He goes, why would you say that? He goes, well, you're bound to be happy the next 2 weeks, aren't you? Right. He goes, and then when he walked in the next day, he goes, how's you been? He goes, I've had a fantastic 2 weeks. He goes, I'm sorry to hear that. He goes, why? He goes, you're in for a rough ride. Here's what's so funny about political correctness. Go about that. We're grabbing. You better be like this. You better be like that. You better go, I'm a peace and freedom. It's all like, this is the mind out of control. This is the ego out of fucking control. That's why sometimes these people, they would clap and cheer as their fellow citizens got fucking executed before that mind, that ego would let them play, think they're wrong, right? It's that strong. It's that strong. So when they're talking about, I listened to this old Indian mystic one day, he goes, you must get that demon out of you. He goes, it is an insane madman and will kill you. Here's the great thing. You also understand it's not an enemy. It is the divine. Why? Because all manifestation is divine. There's no enemy here. So this is how you let go of control. Why? So how would you meditate, right? What do they start to do how am I letting go of control? Well, when thoughts rise now, you realize you can choose to grab them. Sometimes they get you too quick. You don't even know. You're just lost. The mind is so tricky and artful. Mm. So if you go to meditate and you think, oh, I'll use a breath, you might be five in. You think, I've really got this. And next minute, I'm just thinking about, how did I get here? How did I get it? Just so. So if you just start to watch it, you start to see its nature, right? And then you start to realize that as thoughts come up and feelings then attach to them, because the nervous system fires that, right? Then you can start to realize I don't have to fucking involve myself in that. I can stand here and just watch it. And the more, instead of grabbing it and going, now I have this opinion, you just watch it. And the more you watch it, the less it starts to come because it's got no Velcro anymore. Mm. Right. So instead of going to therapy and doing all this and talking about, no, stop inquiring, stop concerning yourself.
Yeah.
I had an argument with someone the other week. Then I was 2 days later, I still got fucking tight gut and I'm planning revenge, even though it's not, you know, and you know, that fucking dickhead. But, but it's in me. I can feel it. I'm just looking at it. And then I'm washing up that afternoon. And it's in me. Ah, that fucking, say that to me and me guts. And I'm sitting there going, look at it. It's just, I'm washing up. Right. Nothing's happening.
No. Yeah.
Right. Right. The only thing that's happening is this thing is fucking going insane. Right. So I just went, I'll just wash up while it. Right. You just ignore it.
Yeah.
And then you realize that. So then you start to realize no one can do anything to you. Why? Because you just don't. Even to the point, ultimately, which, you know, they could kill you. But if you're in that, if you've realized, self-realized, the ultimate state of what? That you're not in control of anything. You are the dreamer of the dream. You're beyond this reality. You're beyond this fucking reality, right? Like, but this reality is also not a filthy thing. Oh, you got to get away from it. No, you can't. No, it's the divine manifest. It's everything being nothing simultaneously, which the mind can't comprehend. So they go, don't use the mind to try and work it out because it can't. It can't. So don't go there. Just forget about it. So understand the realm of the mind, what it can do, what it can't, and stop trying to use it for things it can't do, and stop letting it use you. For things that you don't want to fucking do.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.